Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us Rashida Scholes, who writes a romantic urban fantasy novel series called the Grace Blood series. She uses the pen name Jasmine Silvera. The series is set in an alternate present-day Prague and centers around a mortal woman who is trained to draw on the power of gods through dance and who gets involved with a powerful necromancer while solving a series of murders. Jasmine Silvera, the pen name, is the author of three romantic urban fantasies in this series. They include the novels Death Dancer, Dancer's Flame, and The Talon and the Blade, which will be out this year. Silvera is the pen name, as I said, of our Seattle-based writer, guest, and editor, Rashida Scholes. In 2005, she attended Clarion West Writers Workshop, and she is the former editor of a semi-pro zine, an online magazine, that was voted the 2017 Hugo finalist in that category. She now serves on the Clarion West Board of Directors and is a member of the Romance Writers of America. Welcome to the program, Rashida.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
It is my pleasure to talk to you about your writing and also about this specific genre. Perhaps to begin, you could tell us what urban fantasy romance is as a genre.
Romantic urban fantasy is a little bit of a mishmash of genres, or maybe a bringing together of some subgenres. Fantasy as a genre is something that, or a subgenre of fantasy, it centers around a contemporary world in which supernatural creatures live. In the romance genre, they have another subgenre, which is called paranormal romance. And that's, again, supernatural creatures. And it could be in any time period, but it often takes place in the contemporary world. So the difference is that as a romance novel and genre, there's a sort of requirement that they have a happily ever after, that things end well, the main characters, and the relationship is sort of the focus of the story. Whereas in urban fantasy, the focus tends to be more external on the plot level, and the requirement isn't there that the two characters who are in the romantic entanglement wind up in any way, shape, or form, either together or not together or alive or dead. So in romantic urban fantasy, I think it's kind of trying to bring those two things back together, where the internal plotting of the relationship is just as important as the external plot. The external plot relies on that internal kind of relationship coming together and the guarantee that things are going to end well.
There is a guarantee that they'll end well.
The happily ever after is definitely part of the subgenre as far as I'm concerned.
So do you think that the audience to the traditional romantic novel is similar or different than the audience for urban fantasy?
Sheila, I think there's so much crossover. I think that we often think that readers fall far more along genre lines than they actually do. I know for myself, I read across genres all the time. I mean, I really enjoy a lot of traditional speculative fiction and fantasy that has more of a literary tilt that may or may have a romance in it. But there are some days that I just love to curl up with a good romance novel where there's a little bit of swooning and some adventure, and I know that everything's going to end well for those two characters. So yeah. I think I am not alone in that, and I think that there are a lot of readers who will enjoy both of those things, and especially seeing them together in a novel.
And how did you choose this as a genre for you to write a series in?
Well, it sort of chose me. I wish I could say I was really conscious about it, but it's been one of those things that in my own writing, I come out of a more traditional fantasy speculative fiction background. I attended Clarion West Writers Workshop, which was the largest and one a very prestigious writing workshop for writers of more traditional speculative fiction on the West Coast. And so I always knew my teachers were Octavia Butler, Andy Duncan, Connie Willis, L. Timmel DeChump, and I always was drawn to this fantasy element. But every single one of my stories has this little thread of romance through it. And I knew that whatever I wound up writing would have a romantic element to it. I just didn't know how big it was going to be. So when it came time to write the series and I started doing the plotting, I realized very quickly I had two characters who were very different and struck sparks right away and kind of refused to stop trying to kiss each other. So I just went with it.
You said something really interesting just now. You said when it came time to. How did you know it was time?
Oh, so this maybe gets a little bit into my background and the specific series. The series is set in Prague in the Czech Republic. We actually lived there for 2 years. This is not the first set of books that I've written. I don't even want to think about how many drafted novels that I have tucked into trunks that I will never show the world. But every year I participate in National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. And every year I try to come up with something new. I use that month as an opportunity to work on a new idea because I've got a deadline. I've got a month, and whatever comes out of it is great. Whatever, if it works, fantastic. If it doesn't work, I stick it in a trunk and I walk away and do something else. And so I happened to be in Prague during NaNoWriMo, and I was feeling out the threads of this story, and things were coming to me as I was touring the city and walking around and looking at the architecture and reading about the history of the city. And I just knew that I was going to set something in Prague. And so that's kind of how this came about.
I see. And the other curious thing to me is that your main character uses dance as a way of dealing with the murders and the crimes and getting help. Where did that part come from?
So I'm a super physical person. You're a poor audio engineer. I'm flapping my arms madly. I'm having to sit on my hands to keep from talking with them right now. I've always been very physical. I was an athlete in school. I transitioned into yoga and I've done some dancing. I'm definitely not anywhere near professional level. I mostly am a salsa dancer. I love salsa. So that's my dance expertise. And actually, in the writing of this book, I started to take an adult ballet class mm-hmm. just so that I would have the sensation, the physical sensation of what some of the dancing felt like. But I did. I've practiced yoga for, oh gosh, almost 15 years now. I've taught for a while. So I've always been really into physical awareness and movement. And then as I was doing the research for the story, I kept hitting on the fact that dance in so many cultures around the world is used as a communication technique. And it's a way of telling stories. In many traditions, dance is incorporated into religious belief or a way of communicating or receiving communication from the divine. So once I hit that thread, I was just off and running. And I knew that I was going to be able to combine my personal experience with movement with this background in sort of world cultures and how movement is used in communication, and that it would be something interesting.
Well, it is interesting. I'm hoping that you'll be able to read an excerpt from the book. Do you have one prepared?
I can pull something up. I can actually probably read the first couple of chapters are great because it's the dance. So this is the first chapter from Death's Dancer, the first book in the Grace Blood series. Izella Vogel danced for God, no longer convinced anyone was listening. She pressed the ball of her bare left foot into the polished wooden floorboard. As she exhaled, her right leg floated with extraordinary control from the floor. Her fingers flared. With a slight bend of her elbow, she pushed her hands away from her body. Her right arm twisted down from the shoulder blade as her left fingertip arched toward the sky. In every movement, every breath, she danced, demanding their attention anyway. The scent of cardamom, oranges, and cinnamon permeated the air from the pots of scented water hanging around the hexagonal ring. There was no evidence dancing in a ring was more or less effective than anywhere else. A tradition of performers dictated a dedicated space, properly lit with good ventilation and solid flooring, was a necessity. Each academy had its own ring style, but for Izella, the Praha Academy was home. The domed skylight bathed the room in an aura of hued light from sea glass soft panes. Izella bowed her back, the muscles of her abdomen contracting to support her upper body as it cascaded behind her, until the sweep of her dark hair dusted the floor. Each movement had a name, and when strung together in choreographed sequence, they became a request from her patron to the gods themselves. She knew them all. Of the entities they called gods, she knew less. Powerful, inexplicable forces with their own priorities had existed among humanity since the beginning. Without knowing better, humans labeled them gods and turned to worship, attempting to appease and gain favor. The lack of interest in communication from the gods didn't stop humanity from trying. Dancing saved humanity, or nearly doomed it. Her right palm met the floor before the left. Her belly contracted, drawing first the extended right leg and then the trailing left over her head. She found a moment of balance, an inversion. It was hard not to feel proud of her skill in these instances, even knowing her body had already begun to fail her. She held the last pose for a few breaths. The sensation of the world around her returned as the air rushed into her lungs. Sweat rolled down her skin, pooling at her feet. Adrenaline and endorphins kept the coming in her hip at bay. But she knew from experience that the reprieve would not last long. At last, she palmed her hands together over her heart, closed her eyes, and floated through a curtsy. A chime sounded, signaling the completion of the dance. Finished, she lifted her head and left the ring. At the edge of the room, a woman waited patiently, towel in hand. Even at average height, Azella dwarfed her visitor. "Director Savagao," Azella took the offered towel, dabbing at her forehead. "To what do I owe this pleasure?" "I have a new assignment for you," the older woman said. "Urgent and extremely sensitive. Come with me."
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. In case you just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Today, Sheila is talking with Rashida Schultz about her Grace Bloods series, novels penned under the name Jasmine Silvera. The setting is in an alternate, present-day Prague, where a mortal woman draws on the power of gods through dance in solving murders. More information is available at jasminesilvera.com.
One thing that strikes me, well, two things. One is the number of wonderful details that appeal to the senses, from the herbs that we can smell, to the sweat, to the way her legs feel. It's just lovely to be able to be with her in that world that she's dancing in. And the other thing that really strikes me is the strength of this woman. I have to admit that my reading in the romance novel area is not huge, but the few that I have read, in order to talk with some chapters of the organization that has to do with the Romance Writers of America, have not had, for me, strong female characters. They always seem to be one down from the romantic male. Could you address that a little bit? Your character is a very strong person.
Oh, man, you're reading the wrong romances. I'm going to have to give you a list.
All right.
So romance is really interesting as a genre because really the only requirement is this happily ever after, happy for now bit, right? So in that, romance spans the galaxy of plots. And in a way, it's a little, I mean, maybe this is a big hubris kind of comparison, but I feel like romance as a genre is a little bit like Shakespeare. You can kind of set it anywhere and you can put anybody in it. And really, it's the formula and the ending that is what makes it romance. And so I think there are some great authors who are working with really strong women characters, more so now than ever. There's definitely been, I think, in the last 5 or 10 years, and probably before that, I'm not as well read as I probably could be. There's always so many books to read. But I think that having a strong character who's a female, especially in the genre where you're going to be dealing with a supernatural character who's often male. So that's generally the setup in paranormal romance. Although, again, not always. And there are some great authors that are working against that. But I think it's common that the guy is the kind of big, supernatural, all-powerful dude. And that's fun. But it's nice when they're matched in some level. And so I knew very early that Azella was going to be a professional dancer, and if you've ever spoken to or met or listened to a professional dancer speak, they're absolute athletes. They are just as much an athlete as a football player or a wrestler. They deal with injury and pain, and they have to focus and be determined, and the discipline it takes to reach that level is incredible. I think it's superhuman at that point. And I have Azrael, who we haven't met yet, who is the necromancer in the story, is pretty much all-powerful. He's able to make the dead walk and read minds and do spells and all kinds of things. And I knew they needed to be a match for each other on some level, and that to do that, she was going to have to be as strong as him in her area of expertise, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, and it makes me happy. What I remember from reading the formula for the traditional romance novel is that there's this plot point where the woman does something that's misunderstood by the man, and then she's got to earn his respect back. It sounds to me like that might not be part of the formula you're working with.
It's hard to speak to the breadth of romance. I think there are a lot of, within the interpretation, there are a lot of people who are doing very different things with the relationship and interpreting the ways relationships work well, based on their own understanding and experience. We're all writers tackling things that we are trying to understand through our writing, I believe. And so whether we put that in a fantasy or a romance or a straightforward literary fiction, we're all trying to like suss out what makes something work or not work. And so, yeah, I'm sure that there are romances, especially historically, this, we always like to drag out the bodice rippers and the purple prose and kind of beat it up. But I think to look forward and to look at what is being published now in the genre is really exciting, because you have a lot of people whose voices weren't traditionally heard, people of color, non-traditional relationships, and non-heteronormative relationships. There are a lot more LGBTQ relationships that are being written about that involve more than one partner, even poly. And so I think as different people come to the table of romance and are able to tell their stories and are able to tell about experiences that haven't been told, you're going to see that relationships and the way people manage their relationships and how they negotiate power within their relationships can be very, very different from maybe what was popular in the genre 5, 10, definitely 20 years
ago. Very exciting to hear this. And so these books in your genre, where do they appear in the bookstore shelves?
I'm happy to have my books shelved wherever a bookstore will put them.
Of course.
But yeah, what is interesting for me as I navigate this subgenre of romantic urban fantasy is that there's a lot of disagreement about where they go. I am in the romance section often. I'm a member of the Romance Writers of America and my local chapter. I do hang out a lot with romance writers. I'm very fond of them. However, it's also a book that's been described as urban fantasy. And so that puts it squarely in the fantasy and science fiction section. So there are two different bookstores in Seattle that carry the book, and they have them in different sections.
Interesting.
So the reader makes the difference a lot. I'm sure you know this. Genres are all marketing, right? It's the way that publishers market a book and sell it to readers. So it's less for me about the genre that it fits in than where the bookseller thinks they can sell it best, I suppose.
I see. So there's some gatekeepers there before the browser comes in and figures out where they're looking for their book. Booksellers are in tune with that, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's some limitation in that too, because like I said, I personally read outside of genres all the time. I read across genre. So I think that there's some limitation when you say, well, this is just a fantasy novel, or this is just a romance novel, because I think it does pigeonhole it. And I think it will turn some readers who maybe aren't as familiar with the genre, or you've read a few of romance novels, they didn't impress you for whatever reason. And maybe you sort of said, this genre isn't for me. And so it would be unfortunate for me to think that someone would say, oh, this is a romance novel, so I wouldn't touch it.
Right.
Even though it may be very different than the romances that they've read before.
What you're describing is something really quite different than what was traditional 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And I think some of that is like our cultural conversation about what is romance. The romance genre needs to change because we're very much stuck at talking about it, what it was 10, 15,
right,
20 years ago.
Right.
Everybody loves to trot out these old novels that are, for the time, they did something necessary, and that is to center a woman's experience and her pleasure and her satisfaction in a relationship. That didn't mean that they were always portraying healthy relationships. Things have changed, a couple of different waves of feminism now. And so let's allow our understanding of what the genre is to also expand.
Okay. Well, I'm smiling listening to that. It's a very happy development. I'm going to go back to your series. And my first question is, why a pen name?
Oh, gosh. My boilerplate line is that Rashida Schultz sounds like a German economist. She's very, very smart, very straightforward. So there's an element of it that's just branding and marketing. So Rashida Schultz, Jasmine Silvera, is a very much more evocative name. It feels to me a little bit more like the type of story that I want to tell is told by a woman named Jasmine Silvera. It's also my name. My middle name is Jasmine, so it's not like I pulled a name out of a hat.
Uh-huh.
And Silvera is a family name on my mother's side. So I inherited both of these names. So there's an element of it that's just branding. I think it sounds better. I definitely feel like it sells a little bit better in the romance genre. And then also it differentiates for me from some of my previous work in more, I would call traditional speculative fiction and fantasy. I have had some short stories published that are definitely more direct fantasy. I was the editor of a webzine that did speculative fiction, so science fiction, fantasy, slipstream, et cetera, without the romantic element specifically. So it's just a little bit of a way of differentiating what I'm doing at this moment.
when you sit down to write in this series, do you feel like you become this person, Jasmine Silvera?
Oh, gosh, no. No, it's always me. It's always me. I have enough characters living in my head and talking and telling me their stories to then assume another persona.
I had this image
of you.
Too
many things to keep track of.
Yeah, perhaps wearing different clothes when you sat down to write from that pen name. But it's reassuring, actually, as a writer to hear you say, no, you're the same person. You're just writing in a different genre. So are you working on more in that same series, Beyond the Three?
This kind of grew. It sort of mushroomed into a whole thing. My original plotting is that this is about a 5-book series. I have the idea is that there are 3 main books that follow the storyline of these 2 characters, Azela and Azrael. And then there are going to be 2 that are a little bit like monster episodes, like a monster of the week. I don't know if you ever watched The X-Files. They always had this conspiracy arc that followed the entire series. And then they'd have these one-offs where they were pursuing a fluke man or a something that killed from the shadows. And so I love the idea of introducing some side characters in these more related but slightly different sort of monster episode books.
Will those monster episodes be set in a different place than Prague?
Yeah, so the 3rd book is The Talon and the Blade is actually the first of those little, I call them the monster episodes. And that one is a side character from the first 2 books named Gregor Schwartz, who is Azrael's enforcer. He's kind of his big bad guy who gets everything done and takes no names of prisoners. He winds up going on an adventure that takes him back to the U.S. His backstory is that he was a Hessian soldier who served in the American Revolution. And so he's now about 200 plus years old. And he's kind of old and jaded and sort of set in his way. And he comes back to the U.S. to help find a catch a monster, basically, and winds up getting into quite an adventure there with his counterpart, who is a woman who serves in the court of the necromancer who controls all of North America. So that's a way to sort of expand the world a little bit for me, because then I get to play with a new set of characters in the same world. And how are things different in North America than they are in Europe? And I feel like I could do that forever. But I realize that people maybe don't want to read that forever. So I will be winding up the series probably with the 5th book and then moving on to some other things.
I see. Do you know where the 5th book will take place?
I think that the 5th book will probably take us back to Prague and into North Africa, actually.
Oh.
So I'm trying to work out some travel arrangements because I do like to travel where I write.
Uh-huh.
So we're trying to see how I can make that happen.
That sounds exciting. And it was going to be what I would ask you is, are you going to do that kind of primary research being in the location? And it sounds like the answer is you want to. So I hope you get to do that. What was your path to publication?
I think like a lot of writers, I have written novel after novel after novel and finally hit one that just seemed to be the right combination of elements that I was passionate about, that was an interesting story, and that somebody else got on board with. And so in my case, for a short time, there was a program called Kindle Scout, which was run by Amazon, and they basically asked authors to submit the first couple of chapters of their story and some information about the story, and they put it up on a site and let readers vote on it. And a combination of the reader vote and an editorial process, which they never quite explained, happened. After this combination of reader voting and editorial process, a decision was made to offer the author a publishing contract. And so the first book in the series was actually published in this as part of this Kindle Scout program.
That's exciting. I've heard about that program. I know some people who wrote for it. And it's very exciting to hear that it culminated in success. So congratulations on that early entry into the genre. And then what happened from there?
So the first book came out, and the process of working on book 2, Kindle Scout actually was closed. And so the books that were published through Kindle Scout were absorbed into Kindle Press, which is Amazon's digital first printing imprint. We all kind of were absorbed. So at that point, it was very, very difficult to work with the publisher. All of my contacts originally sort of vanished. When I wanted to continue the series, there was very little interest from them. So at that point, I decided that I had gotten enough experience that I would finish the series myself as a self-published author. Because my contract didn't preclude me from writing in the same world, I kept writing and then eventually got my rights back for the first book and have reissued it under my own imprint. That's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, you're pretty busy writing and marketing and publishing. How do you handle all that?
Oh, I'm a Gemini, so I would feel totally bored if I wasn't doing a little bit of all of it anyway. It's a struggle. It's like a day-to-day. I definitely do a lot of time management, and I'm pretty rigid about keeping sort of project goals and staying on track. And some days are writing days, and other days are marketing days and publishing days. My background is in project management, though. So in a way, I had a lot of practice professionally doing this before I got into doing it for myself.
Great to hear, because so many times we think that our training or our day job sort of interfered with our becoming writers. And here you're proving that nothing's wasted. What we've learned and our trainings can benefit us in a writing life. I'm very excited to hear that from you. And I think it's very reassuring to a lot of writers listening and also to a lot of readers. Writers aren't this sort of like detached from the real world species, right? We live in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're absolutely in it. And I think to any of your writers that are out there listening and wondering, fighting to get their writing time in with their day job or their family life or all of the many things that can sometimes keep us from our keyboards or our pens, like, hang in there. Like, all of this is fodder. Everything that you do is fodder for the machine of your creativity.
Thank you. I think that was a really good ending, what you said. All of it is fodder.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Thank you.